Well, that's a name I remember. I did not know that, but it's possible.
Yeah.
I figured it was just on the stringer beat at Yawk High School covering football or something on a Friday night.
Yeah. And we had like a 20-year hiatus where we didn't see each other, and then we started hooking up again.
Yeah.
So, and it's good. And Jim has been kind enough to review my book, How to Deal with Stuff That Sucks. And, excuse me, I've got something in my throat right now, so... Take it away, Jim.
Okay, so I can take over the.
Yes.
We could. It's having you on as a guest on your own podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that too.
I do too.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, because I read the book, and since I've written, I'm working on my seventh.
Yeah.
I know the ups and downs. I know what. I know what's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to let you know whether this book's good yet.
Well, how many of your books, the last book you had published by Triumph, right?
Some books by Triumph, but Triumph took over, sports, I don't know.
Yeah, that's my deal too, is I haven't had, this book was traditionally published by Roland and Littlefield. They wanted to publish it, and then they saw it came back and they said it was too irreverent. And I said, fine, I want to cancel that contract. And I took it and I made it even more irreverent.
I'm glad. It's irreverent.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I don't want to give the review away here.
Yet. Okay.
Because I was a little apprehensive at first.
Yeah. Why? How come?
Well, because, you know, how to deal with stuff that sucks. And really cool cover.
Thank you.
Really cool cover.
I was resistant to that because I thought it's obnoxious to have your own picture on the cover of your book. But I put up a poll on my blog, and everybody said, keep it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a patient man.
Yeah.
And you have the most clever of puns and jokes. And I lose patience with that sometimes. I think I've told you. You know, we were at a book signing, I remember, in Latrobe, not in Ligonier, at Second Chapter Books. And... we humored each other. We made each other laugh. And it was an all-day thing. We met each other's friends and talked a little stories about our books and told our puns, made our jokes. And I had to give you a ride home.
Yeah. Which I'll be asking for today, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And are we allowed to drop F-bombs here?
Yes.
Okay. So on the way home, I'm like, I'm tired. I hope Chris doesn't tell me too many more puns. And you were very quiet. And I said, Chris, we're about to your place. No, we're about here, your office.
Yeah.
And it was a Saturday night, I think, and I was dropping you off. And you were quiet. I thought you'd be a little more excited to be coming to the office. The office, right? And... I said, Chris, I'm sorry. I just don't have anything to say. I'm tired. Because I was sick, too. And I've been treated for head and neck cancer. And that was before all that started. So the tumor in my throat was hurting. And, you know.
All of which I was unaware of.
Well, I think I complained about it. I knew what was happening. And, you know, now it's post-treatment and everything's good. But it's just the process, the treatment.
Yeah.
You know. And so... I didn't want to talk, and I said, Chris, I'm sorry, I'm not talking. And you go, hey, I'm not talking either, and you weren't. And I said, well, you got a lot of talking tonight ahead of you, don't you? And you said, you know, sometimes I wish everyone would just shut the fuck up. And so I'm like, yeah, okay. And so, otherwise... I'm not a, you know, you started with your dedication. It was to Val, your wife.
Yeah.
And it was through thick and thin. I'm thick, she's thin. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And some other examples. You were an Olympian.
Yes, because I limp.
Yeah. You had saw a horse won a race by a nose, and you thought they would start breeding horses
longer noses.
By length of noses, and you came up with some horse names, Schnozzalot or something. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. But that abated. There was just a few of those.
Yeah.
The cannibal and cannibbler.
Yeah.
That abated quickly.
Yeah.
Your humor, your irreverence, your ease of humor without going around all that cleverness to get to a cool pun. you know Chuck Finer.
Yeah.
He called himself the Merry Punster, or other writers did, or something. Yeah. Very, very funny guy, but let's not try so hard to get there. But anyway, that's just my personal thing.
Yeah.
Don't change the way you are. But this, there was so much humor, and so it was so easy. You got to it so easily.
Thank you.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Your humor is really good. You don't have to try.
Yeah.
You don't have to try. If Parkinson's isn't, I'm just the first chapter, it all went away. If Parkinson's isn't debilitating, what is life? And just hit me, you know. I'm the author of 11 books, 4 are so bad I don't even acknowledge them. that self-awareness, that humility, I feel the same way, you know. I got a couple I don't want to acknowledge. The end of that chapter, you were marking all your negatives, and then you said, and I have Parkinson's.
Yeah.
But man, you should have seen me in 8th grade.
I was a hell of a good-looking kid.
You know, but that went back to the lead of the chapter.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
And I love how you circle back like that.
Yeah, I love to do that. I think that's a good thing for writers to embrace.
I know, and it's not done enough. It's so easy.
It's easy to do.
It is.
It's like ringing a bell. It puts a whole bow on the whole chapter.
As long as you don't appear to be trying too hard. And you're not. Like, let me just, I have a page marked for this.
Okay.
Page 96, chapter 23. It is said that it was A-list philosopher Socrates who declared, "By all means, marry. If you get a good wife, you'll be happy. If you get a bad one, you'll become a philosopher." That's a great quote.
That's a great quote.
I mean, that's using his humor, right? And you got into Parkinson's and my marriage, which is another topic I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But then at the end, you got back to Socrates. "After all, the only true wisdom is knowing you know nothing at all." That last one there is attributed to the great Socrates. I wonder if he composed it while his wife was off playing pickleball.
Yeah.
Because you had talked about your wife and pickleball. But you circled back to Socrates because you really didn't. This wasn't a chapter about Socrates.
Yeah.
But to circle back. And you don't do it all the time. But it's really nifty how you did it, and I really enjoyed your writing.
Thanks so much.
You know, I really liked Evan and Elle.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm very proud.
But there was a lot of trying too hard.
There was. I wanted to put everything I had in that one.
Yeah. Now this one, that irreverence, maybe that being a little pissed off that it wasn't judged.
Yeah.
Properly. Might have sped up your humor. You cruised through it. It was really good.
Good.
It was really good writing.
Thanks.
And there was also more than irreverence. There was, like, are you talking about your marriage?
Yeah.
And, you know, you had mentioned a couple times that it was rocky at times. It might even be rocky now.
Yeah.
You didn't get into specifics, but That's a tough.
I felt I had to put that in there, though, because, you know, we've been together for 30 years, and is it fair for me to ask her to stay with me during these times when I'm edging toward disabledness? You know, that's the future. And she's fit and active and enjoys playing pickleball and all that stuff. And I try to avoid putting her in the situation where she has to defend it or attack it. But I did want to address that, because marriage a long time is very difficult for anybody.
Yeah.
As I say in there, one of the lines that I am fond of is, if marriage is so great, how come there's no Mrs. God?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it can be very tough. And then when you add things like Parkinson's and my lack of employment, you know, it can be very hard on a spouse. And I understand that. But you think after 30 years, you get some leash a little bit.
Well, here's the thing about all of that. You know, you're broaching a tender topic.
Yeah.
And with reason, as you just explained. But you're also, you felt, you seemed, and 'cause this is something, I was married 38 years.
Yeah.
Got divorced. We're friendly. We're going to the show tonight.
Yeah.
We're going to the Alejandro Escovedo show tonight. And so there's some, it's neat. It's neat.
Yeah.
But after I got divorced as a writer, I felt free to write about things that you wrote about that you can't write about when you're married. Like, you went into detail about, not you didn't go into detail about your first kiss, but the joy, the remembrance of the first kiss. And that, you know, like Neil Young always says, it's not what you say, it's how you make people feel. And that's what you did in a lot of this stuff. It made me feel a lot of that too. And it also, as a writer who was divorced and then felt freer to write about things like that, like dating and what this is like and what that is like that I didn't feel I could before. And being a writer, you should feel unencumbered to write about anything. Yeah,
but you know there's payback if you do that at the home front.
Well, you did it though.
Yeah.
So deal with that payback whatever way you have, but you should be lauded right now for expressing that freedom.
Yeah, and I hope thought it had to be addressed.
Well, I mean, it wasn't just the first kiss.
Yeah.
Let's see. In the sixth grade, about making out in the dugout. I can't remember the full story. Yeah. I think she called you over to PA.
Got me out of
snuck got me you out of class. School, and you went to made out in the dugout. Chapter three. one of the symptoms of Parkinson's was a lusty desire to screw women other than my wife. I mean, that's something hard to get away with, but I get it. I think. And not just men get it, just people get it.
Yeah, anybody who's been in that situation.
Yeah, but to say it, hopefully she's understanding.
I thought it had to be an honest book, you know, that I was going to put that in there.
That's the point I'm getting at. Yeah. It wasn't just irreverent, it was honest. There are other, you're in love with your neurologist. I mean, even up to date.
Yeah, she's a looker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's brainy.
See, that was easy. You eased right into that. That's good. The Neil Armstrong.
He needed some space.
Yeah. To get away from a dull marriage or something.
Yeah, that's in that movie.
We all get the dull marriage thing.
Yeah.
We all get that. And there, I don't think there's a guy alive or a woman alive that wouldn't understand that.
Yeah.
But to say it, kudos.
Thank you.
And that to me, maybe it stood out because I've just come to realize the difficulty of it and the refreshingness, if that's a word, of expressing things like those.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had the guts. You know, I did a book, Steeler Nation.
Yeah, I love that one.
I did a road trip book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raucous.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, being married and then going off with another dude in an RV, you know, the best road trip books of all times have wandered into parties and scenes and, you know, adultery maybe or all of that kind of thing. And it makes those books, who was the guy that made the first road trip
book? Hunter S. Thompson. Or Jack Kerouac.
Kerouac. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a student of Kerouac. Hunter S. Thompson, I don't know that he was so high on drugs the whole time. I don't know if he ever. But all of that party scene, you know, and I was going to go to a lot of bars with Steeler Nation partying at away games.
Yeah.
And I remember when they started chanting, I said, and I got out of there, started chanting, and I left in Arizona. And part of that was, I don't drink, and I'm not going to be a part of this party scene, and I can't write about anything if good stuff happens anyway.
Yeah.
So what do instead I get up at 5 in the morning and drive to go interview Willie Parker in Clinton, North Carolina, Willie Parker's family. But guess what? That turned it into a better book.
Yeah.
All that party stuff that I thought was part of road trips, that I was lamenting having to miss made me work harder on the football.
Yeah.
And I thought it eventually turned out better But at the time, I'm like, I can't write about it if anything cool does happen. And I have always avoided that. I don't want to hurt her, right?
Right.
And then to be freed and to be able to write about anything I want, because that's what writers do.
Yeah.
They have to be honest. And so you did that. And it made, I recognize, that's the first one when I, there's a lot of honesty in this book. But, you know, Neil Young again, I'm going to see him. Daryl Hannah made a documentary of him. It's Thursday night, one night only. Maybe you want to go with me, because I'm Thursday night, I'm going. If I have to go by myself to Monroeville Mall. But I'm a big Neil fan. And your last chapter brought to mind one of his songs. But Neil did a song called, I think, Banjo, off his Greendale. Songs nobody knows. But it was, you know, about writing. You want to get close, but not too close. And you walk that fine line perfectly. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about things you were honest about, but you weren't overly uncomfortably honest.
Yeah.
You walked that line. The honesty was, it made you realize some of you. It made you think of your own problems because you were touching on them.
Yeah.
And also, as me, a writer, like, you were able to, I mean, some of the family stuff. Now, I thought it was cool that your great-grandpa is Homer Simpson. I mean, how do you not have that on the title of a book? I don't know. But, I mean, you talked about your mother's dementia, and I believe you came close to saying it was good that she died.
Oh, I definitely say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on Easter. This is Easter weekend, and it was about 5 years ago that she almost died at church at communion. She almost choked on a communion wafer. And I remember thinking clearly, I thought, if anybody tries to Heimlich them, what do I do? Do I shove them away? Nobody touch her. Because she was about to die the most beautiful Christian death ever. You know, choking on the body of Christ on the altar on Easter Sunday. So it would have been a great, I said she'd get a box seat in heaven for that.
Yeah.
But that was honest. And my mother was a person of very dark humor. She was a joyful person, but she had a very funny, dark sense of humor. So I wanted to put that in there.
Yeah. Well, and also your sense of humor. I forget exactly the context, but the paragraph all by itself and the next paragraph was, praise God. Like, she lived or something.
Yeah.
And it was like you didn't want her to.
Right.
And you're like, praise God. It was like a deadpan.
Yes, right.
That's brilliant. And I think it was your dad's funeral when someone, I have it written down.
I wanted to know if he'd been saved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I remember saying he was too busy helping others to worry about saving himself.
Yeah. You were like pissed about.
Yeah.
And I think most people will recognize that too. Did he save himself before he died? Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a good guy.
Yeah,
he helped a lot of people. Whether he did it the way you think he's supposed to have done it religiously, I love that.
Oh, thanks.
That was great. But also, that's honest.
Yeah.
You know, we're all supposed to be saved. We're all supposed to do it the right way religiously. I don't know if we even know what it is.
Yeah.
Some of us don't, and it's kind of embarrassing.
And my grandfather said that he wanted to ask God when he got to heaven, I know you created heaven and earth, but who or what created you? Which is a great existential question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your grandpa, his suicide attempt.
Yeah. 98 years old, 96 years old.
Yeah.
Or 97.
But I don't want to ruin the endings of some of these chapters.
Yeah.
But that's all difficult stuff, and you delved into it, but it wasn't what's the word I'm looking for? Not squeamish.
Maudlin.
No, it wasn't. You didn't shudder. You didn't. There's a word I'm looking for, but it wasn't. You didn't cross the line.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was really well done.
Hmm.
You talked about your debt.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That can't be easy. And, you know, you put a number in there, too, and I was like, well, that's not that bad.
I look at that, but when you consider the trajectory of my earnings, it is bad because I don't have any money. I don't have a car because I can't afford that. And I don't go out to golf or watch baseball games, you know. But I figure I had 55 really good years, and they were all slammed together. And I didn't have any break or pause. It wasn't like a maternity leave where I had to, like, stay home and watch somebody else's kid or something like that. It was 55 great years.
Yeah.
If I lived to be 100, that's still on the plus side.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to do that, and I was lucky to, you know.
Yeah, so you understand.
Yeah.
You get it. But also understanding your thinking about it. What's the word? The words aren't coming to me like they should. You'd think I would have better words being a writer. you know, your consternation over it.
Yeah, befuddled.
It
befuddles me. It infuriates my wife.
Well, the debt.
Yeah.
The lack of.
But I see. I still think that one of these days the universe will correct itself and I will be well paid. You know, I've had some speaking opportunities where I was paid $2,500 and they said you should have asked for double that. And so right now I'm making a big push to try and get speaking engagements where I get $5,000. I don't understand the world where they don't want to pay me $2,500, so I ask for $5,000.
We've talked about this. Yeah. All of a sudden he's an elite talker. Well, we better bring him in. Yeah. Oh, he only wants $2,500? What kind of schmuck is this guy?
But I do believe I'll be on top of that debt in 6 months, let's say. But that's not 6 months.
Well, for what? Here. I mean, your kids have been through college, both of them?
Yeah.
Okay. One's
a freshman.
You have stayed together in your marriage over 30 years.
Yeah.
You're still together.
Yeah.
Your house is paid for?
Yeah.
Okay. You got an office.
I got an office in the Tin Lizzie.
Look at that jacket. You know, you didn't go driving down a hill. That's a great chapter. Your driving fiasco.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. See, and that also, to get away from the debt, I mean, you address it. It obviously brings you consternation, but you're not killing yourself over it.
Yeah, I'm not going to kill myself over it.
And really, the number isn't as high. And also, success. Success goes with the debt too. And you wrote, I've been feeling rage that the years I expected to be so full of achievement and, in my eyes, long overdue acclaim will be nullified by the Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I have that too.
Yeah.
We've commiserated on this.
Yeah.
The difference between us two. I mean, I saw some of the travel pieces you've done, you've been able to do. I'm jealous of all that.
Yeah.
But I think the one edge I've had is I cover the Steelers.
Yeah.
There's a mass group of people that want to read it, and I can,
I always say that when we go to Ligonier for Fort Ligonier Days, it's second chapter books. You're sitting there, I'm sitting here in the middle, and Stan Gordon's over here.
Well, neither one of us write about UFOs, so we're totally outclassed, right?
He's got the long lines.
Yeah.
You've got huge lines, and I've got...
Not huge.
I've got nobody there.
I've got steady.
Yeah, and people are engaged by you, though, because they're familiar with your work, and they love... If you put Paul Amalo in a title of a book, that's going to draw a lot of deserved interest, and that's such a great book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people want to have that contact with you.
Well, I you know, the books haven't... That's the Ornation book. Back when you could self-publish and get it into Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
2008 was like the last year.
Yeah.
Because that, my book came out at the same time the economy collapsed.
Yeah.
The same time. We had a $50,000 check from Borders that was hanging on.
Oh, no.
But it went our way.
Oh, it did.
And my guy said it could go against you.
Yeah.
And then he called me, you got it. So it was like the last gasp of the freelance writer in 2008. And the Paul Amalo book was also, I put so much work into it and had a good following, and I think the timing, he was going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That made good change.
And he was beloved.
And he is beloved.
He's beloved, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that Sea Ornation book made more money. It was my biggest money maker.
Yeah.
It got great reviews, and it linked right to Amazon, and Barnes and Noble didn't have a problem with me having it on Amazon. It was all mine. You know, I didn't get a buck and a half a copy from a publisher. Yeah. I got all the money.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And we had a cool distributor at the time, only wanted a couple percentage points. Barnes and Noble got half, I got half, he got a couple
Everybody's
points.
Happy.
Yeah. And then the distributor apparently wasn't happy because he retired.
Yeah.
And now we have no distributor.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that held it all together. But no, I had a steady weekly income covering the Steelers as a beat writer. That, I think, was the difference.
Yeah.
Where the books were gravy.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
Your books are more, I got to make it on this one.
Yeah.
I got to give a lot of speeches.
It's always been climbing the mountain.
So you're a real writer.
Well, in some ways you can say that, but I aspire to be a real writer. I've always said, people say, are you sorry you're not famous? I say, I'm sorry I'm not solvent.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to break even.
You want to make your wife happy.
Yes. I want to make my kids happy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I left Nashville, I worked at the newspaper down there. My idea of a splurge was getting a pizza with pepperoni and sausage.
Yeah.
It's like, Rodell must have hit the track today. He's getting two toppings. But, it's just been elusive, and it befuddles me because I get such a great reaction from readers. You know, it's very moving. The reaction you're giving me today is wonderful.
Well, the thing
why
about,
I can't translate that into money is...
Well, here's the thing. It's like you've moved beyond that thought with this irreverence.
Yeah.
And honesty, but there's no begging for sympathy.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. You didn't cross that line. It's a really good book. And it's almost like you know you're not going to get rich from it.
I feel that
you just let it all hang out. Too bad.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe that's what puts it over the top. I doubt it. You know, I'm a writer. I know. I thought Pull 'Em All would put me over the top.
Right.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah, you should say, I've got 3,000 books in my garage. I don't know what I'm going to do with 3,000 books. I give them away to charities when I can, you know.
Yeah, they're a reminder every day you see them.
Yeah, right. Right.
Mocking you.
Right. So, and somebody just gave me this pep talk about how art, good art, at the time isn't appreciated.
Yeah.
And I think this, I mean, your other stuff too, Evan and Elle for sure, but this definitely is a brilliant piece of art that will live forever, longer than you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I've got this all marked up, and I've got it signed, beautiful, you wrote to me. I've got it marked up, and, you know, I noticed this today. This was my Ohio baseball Bobcats. This was the last sporting event I went to at Ohio.
Yeah.
I use concert stubs as my bookmarks.
Too.
I didn't pick this because you were a Bobcat. My daughter's a Bobcat.
Yeah.
You know, there's a million other things that connect us that, you know, the homesickness.
Yeah.
When you called your dad.
Yeah, that was my brother.
Called my dad. Your brother, right, right. And, his freshman year. Now, my daughter called me when we were driving, my wife and I, when we were driving home. You come get me.
Yeah,
I'll go to Westmoreland Community College.
Oh,
we still get stuff from Westmoreland Community College because she registered while she was waiting for us to come back, and we're not coming back.
You dropped her off and then turned around to go home, and before she was even done unpacking, she called and said she was home.
I don't know if she was done unpacking, but yeah.
Wow, that's tough. And that breaks your heart.
Right. Well, the Steelers in camp, we dropped her off in July because she had a soccer scholarship, so she was on the soccer team.
Yeah.
And there was a football player from Ohio U in camp at the time. He was a rookie. He was a defensive lineman. I talked to him. I said, man, he knew one of the soccer players. His girlfriend's best friend was on that soccer team.
Yeah.
So we started talking. And I said, you know, my daughter, she's really homesick. She wants me to come get her. He goes, did you drop her off in July? He goes, those girls soccer players, they're all alone. The other sports aren't even there yet, except for football.
Yeah.
And football's too busy on their own. And they're far apart on campus, and it's a desolate campus. He goes, I understand those homesick feelings, and it's common.
Yeah.
So he explained that to me. And then Tom Bradley was just coaching the Steelers. He was at Penn State, and he's dealt with that homesickness too.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, get through the first week. Make sure she stays a week. He goes, she gets through that, she won't ever come home again. And then 4 years later, he goes, she come home? I go, no. She's done, and she's still staying there. She was watching her boyfriend pitch, and that's where I got this Ohio baseball ticket. And I finally, it was the last sporting event. Her and I sat there. It was a doubleheader.
Oh, what a day.
He was the closer, so he wouldn't come in until the end of the game.
Yeah.
And we would sit there, and she'd say, you know, they got beat by a squeeze bunt the other night. How do you stop that? And I'm explaining to her, how do you stop a squeeze bunt? Because I used to coach baseball. And then I said, that was a slider. Someone said it was a curve. She goes, what's the difference between a slider and a curve? And I said, and then there's a screwball. You know, and someone who really wanted to know, it wasn't like I was force-feeding my baseball information. It was someone who was asking questions and was absorbing totally through a doubleheader in the sun. Precious day. And then I went, and I wrote something on Facebook that is still dear to me, and people really responded well. And I thought it was a piece of art, you know, her last. And so just you bringing up homesickness as a Bobcat brought all that back. And that's what art does.
Yeah.
And there are so many instances in there. I didn't read it very fast. The chapters are short, and I liked 3 or 4 chapters. I set aside 20 minutes in the morning to read every day. And now that it's off season for the Steelers, I'll read longer. But I liked to keep this short because I liked to soak it in.
Yeah.
It was such good stuff.
Somebody tooting a buck.
But your travel, I mean, I could go on. Your success, you got into travel, and it just brought up the question. You said, what did you write? In the past year, I've committed to sudden living. I've done precious little of it.
Yeah.
I have been as sedentary as a panda that needs to poop. And, you know, you go through dating apps. You don't, obviously. I'm divorced. And everybody wants to travel.
Yeah.
And you've been a travel writer. You maybe haven't traveled as much as I have.
Yeah.
I have. I've done a lot. I don't know if travel's even fun.
Yeah.
And that was the impression I got from you. And that was a question I wrote under that chapter. Is travel even fun?
I don't think it is anymore. You know, like we did the family beach vacations for a number of years.
Yeah.
I said, a day at the beach isn't even a day at the beach anymore. You know, you got a sunscreen and bug spray and everything like that.
And sand.
Sand everywhere. Yeah, it's just not fun. I'm trying to think what my idea. I'd love to go to Pittsburgh for a weekend. Some nice places in West Virginia to get away from it all. Some Airbnbs in the mountains down there.
Oh, Deep Creek.
Deep Creek's great. New River Gorge.
Yeah.
You know, that's my idea of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Weekend getaways.
Yeah.
When my daughter used to play soccer, weekend getaways to a park in Ohio, cabin.
Yeah. I can't imagine getting on a plane and going to Spain. You know,
Can you imagine how much work that is?
Yeah.
Starting with your passport?
Yeah.
I agree. So a lot of this stuff resonated with me. You're not, I mean, you may not be able to travel because of your condition.
Yeah.
But is travel even fun? And we just talked about that. Your driving disaster. You got into homesickness, the drinking, incontinence.
Yeah, that was a tough one to include.
That took guts.
Yeah.
But it was well done.
That was a tough one to include because you're just setting yourself up for ridicule. But the way it happened, you know, it was a Parkinson's accident.
Yeah.
And I was with all my buddies, and I just had to put it in there, and I tried to make it funny.
It worked.
Thanks.
It worked.
Yeah, it's not when I wonder how I'm going to deal with that with other interviewers or people that want to know more about it. Because I said everything I could say about it.
There's nothing more to know. I mean, yeah.
And I think people would be understanding.
I am.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just another example of the honesty you got into. Lying about your anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
What might have been your greatest day was a facade.
Yeah.
You know, that's some hard stuff to write about. You did pull a punch on the estrangement of a friend.
Yeah.
You admitted to pulling the punch. And he asked you to. I don't know, you know, when you wrote about the driving disaster.
Yeah.
I've had two DUIs.
Yeah.
Before I quit drinking. And I've thought about, you really didn't get into any dark stuff, whether you've had dark stuff. And I think of, if I were to be honest like you were, I would have to include a lot of really dark stuff that people would look at me as a disgusting human being. Dark moments. My father died when I was 10 months old. So it's almost like I was watching a tarot reading of Scorpio.
Yeah.
And the guy's talking about the darkness that comes with being Scorpio. And I thought about that. And I thought about, you don't seem to have darkness. I mean, the incontinence episode was a tough one. I had two DUIs, no accidents.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that dark. But who wants to write about?
That's difficult.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Even though our age group, we kind of grew up.
Part of it. It was winked at more.
It was winked at. It was. When I was younger, I remember.
Yeah.
Cops.
I wouldn't have gotten in trouble with my parents if I'd had a DUI when I was a kid. They would have been disappointed, but I don't think they'd have gotten very upset. No, that's different now.
Well, yeah, and after the second one, I realized I can't do this, and that's when I quit drinking totally, so that I would never be in that situation. And whether it's been good for me, I don't know.
I think there must have been.
Well, I'm 64. But anyway, so it wasn't. I don't want to give the listeners the idea that you went scorched earth.
Yeah.
There is no meanness. There's no nastiness.
I wouldn't want to put that in anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to add to that in the world that we live in right now.
There were funny commentaries like the praise God that your mom's life was saved. The thrill of getting your name on a bar marquee.
On a what?
On a bar marquee.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I had that once.
Did you?
And you brought that back.
Yeah.
That was a great feeling.
Yeah, it really was a great day.
Yeah. It was local.
So I sold 43 books and got drunk for free.
Yeah. Yeah. And you.
What was your book?
That was Steeler Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ernie Furno was a local star athlete, and he opened up a bar, Mr. Mike's. In Irwin on Route 30, and he put me up. Steeler Nation book signing, Jim Wexler.
Oh, nice.
And that was right on Route 30.
Yeah.
Really cool. But the one thing, you know, when I just did a podcast, an Irwin podcast, and they asked me the keys to becoming a writer. What happened to you to become a writer?
Yeah.
And I left out one of the teachers who taught me the most important thing. I took a sports writing class at Pitt in Oakland. And Marino Paracenzo
was
a teacher. What a great writer.
Yeah.
And he gave me an A+. And
nice.
I got an A+ from him. I never used it to go interview with him, though.
Oh.
He would ask me, well, what are you guys doing in Irwin? Are you covering this story? And I'd go, He treated me like I was a real reporter, like if I would have tried, maybe I could have gotten a job there, but
yeah.
I don't know. It feels weird to use a connection like that.
Oh, you should have done it.
I should have. But anyway, he taught me the most important thing was to have spirit in sports writing.
That's a good line.
And, you know, I read something today, a notes column from somebody. He slapped me around in a little bit. And he had a lot of great insights, but it was all angry stuff. And there was no spirit. There was no revival. Okay, insight, good insight, good insight. But no bounce back with any kind of spirit. Maybe that's the state of Pittsburgh sports, but for whatever reason, I find a way to get spirit into all of my stuff. I don't know. And that's one thing that your book is full of.
Yeah.
Spirit.
No unhappy endings.
No.
You know, I've written, like I said, 11 books, four of them I don't acknowledge, but the other six or seven have happy endings. Even when people die and go to hell has a happy ending.
You know, even when you have Parkinson's and you just told us about your debt, your marriage is on the rocks and some things that aren't great, but there's spirit there. There's all hope. There's all kind of hope. You know, we all meet people suffering from Parkinson's disease that have had it for 20 years, 25, 30 years. I just saw somebody in the gym yesterday. I'm 80. I got Parkinson's because he overheard me say I had head and neck cancer.
Yeah.
So, he was sitting at the bed. He was pulling down some weight.
Yeah.
80 years old. He looked great.
Yeah.
There's no signs of anything. But I mean, you know, you quote Tom Petty.
Oh, yeah.
You quote Rogers Hornsby. You compared Bin Laden to the NFL commissioner. That line cracked me up, man. Everyone knows that everyone hates the NFL commissioner, no matter who he is, at what time. The pious lady at your father's funeral, when you asked if he made peace with God. And you used the Thoreau quote. I was not aware we had quarreled.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
Yeah. I read parts of it to Lydia, my ex-wife. I read parts of it about you going into the convenience store.
Oh, I love that story.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't want to give that away. It's a real nugget in the book. Well, but I read it to her. And so
that's a great tribute.
Yeah.
That story was, that happened exactly the way I wrote it. And it took me about 20 minutes to write the story. I walked into the sheets it was around Christmas, and some guy who looked up, he said, Bill, how you doing? I looked around, I was Bill, there was no one else there. And I had to make the decision of whether I'd let the guy down and say, no, I'm sorry, but I'm Chris. And I know it would ruin his day. And I said, I just pretended to be Bill for like the next minute and a half, and it made his day. And I'm very fond of that story, because it happened exactly the way I said it did, word for word.
Well, the asides, though, the you know, I can't remember them right now. The son was named Mark.
Yeah.
It's,
how's Mark doing? I said, he's good. And I said, I didn't want to tell him. Mark's had a drinking problem, so I didn't want to tell him that to ruin his day.
But you had no idea who he was talking about.
That's right.
Right. Who knows if Mark had a drinking problem. Right. It was really good. But anyway, and then the last chapter, I Am the Ocean. Reminded me of a Neil Young song called I Am the Ocean.
Really?
You went through all these things. Well, first you went through your fears. I have a fear, a morbid fear of, I forget where that is.
Morbid fears.
And then at the end I have a morbid fear of morbid fears. But you're continuing going back to Tom Petty.
I'm amazed that we live in a world where Tom Petty's dead and Dick Cheney isn't.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Petty is, I don't know how we get by without him. And Dick Cheney, I just use as a punching bag example, because he's had like six heart operations and still exhibits no heart. But,
Well, Petty, you know, that's one thing. You don't get into politics.
I try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't use Dick Cheney as an example on that. That's just the story I tell. I don't see any benefit for anybody to take sides in these issues.
But you take sides in religion often.
Yeah.
I just think it's because your office is next to the Trump house. I mean, you give an indication of which way you lean in here.
I try to make everybody aware of that. I think that's fair game.
But you don't, I mean, in today's atmosphere, it'd be easy. And some of us want you to.
Yeah.
But
understand. I tried that years ago, and it didn't make any change in anybody's opinion.
No.
And I always wonder, what does it benefit me to piss off the guy who fixes the brakes in my car?
No. Right. Good point. Yeah. So, that's where, I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah.
But the last one, I am this, I am that, it reminded me of Neil Young's song, I Am the Ocean. He did with Pearl Jam. He made an album with Pearl Jam, everybody but Eddie Vedder.
Hmm.
Yeah, Pearl Jam's rhythm section, Mirrorball.
Yeah.
And
that's a declaration of humanity. On our best days, we are those things. You know, you're the 6-foot putt that breaks right in, and you're the Grand Tetons in mid-morning, and
I am every movie Leslie Nielsen made after 1972 and every song Tom Petty ever wrote. I am Cool Hand Luke. I am all the youthful ambitions that time and age simply cannot kill. That's where I wrote I Am the Ocean. It reminded me, Neil Young went one of those. I looked up the words today. I mean, nothing close, but I am in the wrong lane. I am.
Yeah.
I'm the second dessert, you know, you can't resist. Really good. And then you went all through. And then you wrapped it instead of dash 30.
Yeah.
Dash 33.
I'm trying to forgive Rolling Rock for moving out of Latrobe.
That was such a Latrobe thing. That's so perfect. That's really perfect. That was the cherry on top. For me, and I know that 33 is on the bottle, and you know, we have 33 football clubs.
Yeah.
I think because of that.
Yeah.
No one's ever explained it to me. No one's ever explained why 33 is on the Rolling Rock bottle. You may know.
Yeah, it's because they had, they sent it to the printer, and the printer counted how many words. Well, they counted 33 words and wrote it at the bottom, so they'd be charged by the word. And the printer thought, well, they want 33 on there, so he just printed it with the 33.
Oh.
But if you tell anybody that at a party where they're drinking Rolling Rock, about 10 minutes later, you'll see everybody in there, their lips moving.
But the 33 here, I knew what that was about. Because, you know,
not many people are going to get that.
No. But writers.
That's right.
Writers who know Latrobe well.
That's right.
And I might be the only other one beside you. But 30 is what you put at the end of it.
Yeah.
And people good used copy. To do that. To say, done. 30.
Yeah, this is it.
33, man, I'm done in Latrobe. Great job, really. Seriously.
Thank you so much.
It was a piece of art.
Careful reading.
It was really
God
piece of
that
art.
Was just wonderful.
You've left your mark.
Yeah, thanks.
If nothing else happens, if you don't get rich, you've left your mark artistically for sure.
Thank you, and it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.